I'm Chris Reback. This is BCRF Conversations, our series focusing on scientists, thinkers, and leaders who drive the insights and breakthroughs of breast cancer research. Among the many important research areas of breast cancer, and frankly all cancers, is what's called survivorship, quality of life, and the ability to live independently. Among older survivors, one area of concern, cognitive decline or memory loss. This is one of the areas that Dr. Arti Hurria studies. Dr. Hurria and her team focus on older, long-term breast cancer survivors, looking at memory differences between those who received chemotherapy versus those who did not, compared to healthy women of the same age who never had cancer. What might their discoveries offer in terms of predicting potential memory issues among survivors and, importantly, creating interventions to preserve capabilities and the highest possible quality of life? Dr. Hurria is director of the Cancer and Aging Research Program at City of Hope. She is also co-leader of their Cancer Control and Population Sciences Program. A medical oncologist, Dr. Hurria recently joined the board of directors for the American Society of Clinical Oncology, the world's leading professional organization of physicians who provide cancer care. She also has been a BCRF grantee since 2012. Dr. Hurria, thanks for joining me. I would begin with, why aging? There are so many areas of cancer research to focus on. What drew you to the intersection of cancer and aging?
Well, that's a wonderful question. First, it's such an honor to be here and to be with your audience. So thank you so much for the opportunity. The reason for aging is because the vast majority of cancers occur in older adults. So if we look at cancer incidence and cancer mortality or new cases and cancer deaths in general, what we know is that about 60% of new cancer cases and 70% of cancer deaths occur in individuals who are over the age of 65. But that being said, those individuals have really been underrepresented in cancer research to date. And so there is a real need to understand the issues they're facing, older adults with cancer and older cancer survivors, and to specifically focus our resources on their specific needs.
Yeah, I got to say, in researching for this conversation, that really struck me. I mean, to read those statistics around the number of new breast cancer diagnoses, and I assume it's in a range of cancers beyond just breast cancer. But you can, you know, please correct me on that if I have that wrong. But the number of those cancers new diagnoses that occur in women 65 and older, and at that same time, the limited data that exists to guide chemotherapy treatment recommendations, and including the side effects and the need for dose adjustments, it felt to me like a massive and important opportunity, which I guess is exactly how you see it.
Absolutely. And in the you know, to sort of compound the issue, is that right now the population is aging. So in the U.S., if we look at just all cancers, but breast cancer is clearly among those, and we look at, you know, new cancer cases that are going to occur in patients age 65 plus, and that's just, by the way, a kind of line in the sand. We use an age of 65 plus because of Medicare benefits at that point, but we certainly recognize there's a spectrum of aging. But what we see is that there is a rapid growth in this population. We're going to see a 67% increase in cancer diagnoses from 2010 to 2030. We call it the graying of our waiting rooms. It's clearly a population that is on the rise. And yeah, they have been underrepresented in cancer research to date. Unfortunately, when we look at who has been enrolled on the key research studies that define how we practice cancer care, primarily those populations have been younger than the age of the group of individuals who have the disease. And hence what that does is it creates a dilemma when the doctor and the patient are sitting together and trying to make a treatment decision. The doctor is often extrapolating some data in a younger patient population and trying to then individualize this treatment to an older adult. And so this is where, you know, BCRF has really been a leader in this area in recognizing that there was a gap in knowledge and being such an incredible supporter of research to help to really close that gap and help older breast cancer survivors.
Yeah, it's such an interesting point that you make that about the aging, the aging population, and it just, the phrase that came to my mind is a big problem getting bigger, because if the the problem already existed, and then to your point, we as a society, are getting a higher percentage of older folks in the living longer, you can just see how a big problem just keeps. Would just keep getting bigger. Talk to me then, if you would, let's turn to maybe some of your current work and the memory differences. And the study, as I understand it, is looking at memory differences between survivors who received chemotherapy versus those who did not, compared to healthy women of the same age who never had cancer. So take me through, how does the study work? Memory differences is the key, is the central component of it. What was it about that aspect of the aging that made this something that you wanted to focus on for this study? What stage are you at? And what do you hope to find?
So this is a very interesting study that really came out of my time being with patients and sitting with patients. And my entire practice is older patients with breast cancer. That's the group of patients I take care of. So I spend a lot of time with this group. And what they were telling me was that they noticed that they were experiencing some memory problems after receipt of chemotherapy. And so because of that experience, and also because my background is first in geriatrics, I was trained, and then in oncology. So I had an interest in this area, and certainly listening to patients about what they were subjectively feeling was very important to me. And so we banded together, myself at City of Hope, and then Timothy Aulis at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, banded together to really try to understand what it was the patients were experiencing. And so the story is that there have been studies that have looked at changes in memory in patients with cancer, but the majority of those studies have been done among younger adults, which is fascinating just because as we age, we are more likely to experience memory problems. And so you would naturally think this would be something that would have been studied in an older patient population. But the truth of the matter is that actually the vast majority of studies have been done in younger adults. And what those studies were finding were that, yes, there was a group of patients who seemed to be at risk for these memory problems, not everyone, still the risk factors or understanding who is at risk is still, an area of research that is ongoing and early in development. So what we did was we wrote a grant to the government, and we asked to have the opportunity to study breast cancer survivors who were 5 to 15 years out from diagnosis and who had were age 60 plus at diagnosis. So in other words, it was a group who were, older breast cancer survivors who had either received chemotherapy or not, and then a group of healthy controls. And what we've had has been a really, robust response to participating in this. We are now in the third year of the grant and have several hundred patients across the U.S. who are joining us in this effort of understanding how memory might change over time if you've received chemotherapy or not. And the hypothesis we have is that it's not just chemotherapy that might be influencing these changes, but that it's really understanding who the whole person is. What are the other medical problems that they might have that might also impact memory? And if you compound those together and then give someone chemotherapy, then how does that over time influence memory? And so we're following these people over a period of time. We're testing their memory over four time points and looking to see what's that trajectory of memory change over time, and does it differ if you never had cancer, if you had cancer but just needed endocrine therapy or pills to try to decrease the risk of the cancer coming back, that block estrogen production or block the estrogen signaling pathway, or if you needed the receipt of chemotherapy. And I think this is going to be really a very exciting set of study results that I hope we will have an answer to within the next few years. BCRF has been an incredible supporter because they have let us add a component to this study that I think is very novel, but somewhat also, I'd say, high risk and thinking a little bit out of the box. And like, BCRF, which says, give us your best science, and even if it's, even if it's thinking a little bit out of the box, they're willing to let scientists really study an area and get some pilot data. And so what BCRF has done has allowed us to add biomarkers or blood samples that where we are looking at something called allostatic load, which is trying to understand it's looking at really a cumulative measure of the body's stress over time in several different bodily organ systems. And we're trying to see if that sort of composite measure can tell us anything about the risk for memory loss over time. We've been able to add that in. We're also getting samples looking at genetic markers. Thing that we're working on. And yes, the study is going really well. And I think it's one. The thing I'm probably most proud about, is that it really is going to help answer a question that patients have on their mind. And we're still looking for individuals to participate. So, if you are interested, certainly contact me and I would be happy to tell an individual more about the study.
And among the aspects that you were just discussing that interest me and make me curious. So for someone like me who, who would know somebody or have a family member, and obviously memory loss would be an area of concern. Are the lessons that we would try to get out of your research? You talked about, we can look at the various treatments and I assume what effect though and what correlation, or you'll use the proper term, those various treatments might or might not have on memory loss or memory impact. But is there also a component of it where what can we learn from it? What actionable can we take from it? So when we learn that, yes, memory loss, if the hypothesis works out that through a series of factors, memory loss may end up being something that is related to, various aspects of the breast cancer treatment. Does it then make it easier to, include various interventions? Are there then actionable things that people can do? Is that kind of the outcome? Is it more about how we can help address it when it occurs? Is it about how maybe potentially we can help prevent it? What is the range of your goals on this?
Chris, absolutely. That's exactly the idea, which is that what we want to do is understand who is at risk for memory loss. And there's two ways then that we can approach that. Number one is it sets us up for a series of studies where we can actually intervene to try to decrease that risk. So, for example, if we find out that the person who's most at risk is someone who has diabetes and is inactive and is now going to receive chemotherapy. So it's that triad. Let's just suppose that's something we find. Then it would mean, okay, for that population in particular, we should intervene and make sure their blood sugars are well controlled, that we get them on an exercise program. And we help to change, we would hope, that trajectory of of memory changes over time that they might experience. So basically what would happen is it would lead to a teachable moment of, of really helping that individual who we hope will be a long-term survivor of breast cancer not have secondary effects as a consequence of their treatment or as a consequence of their other medical problems. So our next, as soon as we have this data, what we envision is that the next set of studies is going to be exactly what you said, which is to set us up for a series of intervention studies. And the goal here is that, you know, patients will be fully informed about what the risks are and how we can then work to really decrease those risks. And the goal is that we certainly want patients to get the treatment they need, but we want them to get it with the idea that we're thinking about the survivorship years together and how we can not only best attack the breast cancer, but also help them live with the best type of quality throughout those years of survivorship.
I'm really struck by that phrase. I'm always struck by that phrase, quality of life. Mm-hmm. And I'd be interested in, as you have met with, spoken with, you know, heard from patients over the years, is there a wide range of what quality of life means? Is it seems like it's such a personal definition. Do you kind of measure it in some way and kind of institutionalize, you know, what it means to achieve quality of life? How do you think about quality of life and how has your experience with patients over the years kind of impacted that understanding?
You know, it is a wonderful question and one that also really has so many layers that we could discuss. So let me take the most simplistic approach first, but then I'd like to go deeper. Simplistically, we can measure quality of life. There actually are these sort of validated scales that are out there that are a series of questions that we ask a person about sort of their physical well-being and their social well-being and their emotional well-being. So it tries to get at questions that get at quality of life. You can get a score, and that's often what's utilized in the research setting, actually, are these scores. And we're looking at kind of a composite score as well as a score in different domains, function, emotion, spirituality, and so forth. On a deeper level, though, quality of life is something that's probably one of the most fascinating parts of being a doctor and the most wonderful and enriching part, which is really sitting with your patient and having that very individual connection with them about what does it mean personally. And what brings meaning to them and what things might be getting in the way of obtaining, or reaching that personal meaning. And I can tell you in oncology and in particular with older adults, you know, much of my time actually spent with them are really getting to know them and, exploring these things together because you're on a journey with them. You've been on a journey with them through a really serious illness. Then you have the honor of continuing that journey through these years as a survivor and getting to know the patient and their families and their grandkids. And so there's a much richer personal definition, I think, to quality of life that comes through that experience between a patient and their oncologist.
You know, I was struck by this aspect of you earlier in the conversation. You used a phrase when I was asking you about the inspiration, the motivation, and you and how you got to this thought of, you know, really focusing on the aging population. And and the various aspects. And you said it came from listening. It came from listening to your patients. And that really kind of hit me. I was like, whoa, you know, you don't hear researchers and scientists talking, you know, often about that being the, you know, it's terrific. I know that, you know, most, if not all of them do it, but to hear that be such a defining component. And then, you know, now you talking about, you know, the honor of, you know, continuing with these patients and their families and through their lives. And I know, I mean, your bio talks about you being a compassionate and respectful professional, which also struck me as, you know, kind of a wonderful and unique element to have, you know, to have as part of your, you know, professional description. Does this sense of compassion or humanism, it really must inform your work. I mean, it really must inform how you study, what you decide to study, how you interpret, how you apply. I mean, it's got to be something that just travels through every aspect of your work, I guess, to the extent that you feel you're doing your work well. But I assume that really fuels you. Do I have that right?
You know, absolutely. I mean, it is, you know, it's very interesting. Our research, we've been so fortunate because our research has gone very well. And we've been able to garner a number of research grants. But the only reason, or the primary reason, I think we have that success is because every single research grant that I have written has come from a patient encounter or several patient encounters where they have told me that there is, you know, a problem. Is it memory loss, or that they want to understand maybe the risks of therapy better? Every research direction has come from a patient asking me a question where I felt that we could do a better job at answering that patient's question. And hence, it's really the patients that have driven this whole research program of how to best care for older adults with cancer. And as a researcher and as a healthcare provider, I just can't think of a better, you know, just, you know, it is such an honor to take care of these patients and to be a part of their life and to have the chance, you know, the opportunity then to listen to them and to translate what they're saying into a research question and then have the opportunity to go with them on the path of answering it is just so, so gratifying. And it really brings incredible meaning to me. So, you know, if our research is successful, it is solely because of this partnership we've really had with patients along the way and the hope that we can, you know, make it better for the next generation. And it amazes me to see how patients contribute to that mission. You know, they're so willing to participate and to be a part of this and to knowing that they may get nothing in return, but it might help that next person down the line. It's really just inspiring. And my hat goes off to them every day. Patients are making the world better for one another. And there's just nothing like it.
Yeah, it has to be very incredibly inspiring. I mean, they're opening their lives to you, obviously, for you know, the betterment they hope and you hope of others. Just to close out then, and on that note, what's next? What I mean, obviously, you have the current research that we discussed. Is that where most of your focus is right now, or do you always kind of have you know, an ear out for what potentially might, you know, what you might hear, the question from the patient that you might hear that might lead to your you know, the next grant that you think about?
There is so much in the what's next category. I'd say two, which is wonderful. And BCRF has supported, again, some of this work. So one of the biggest research directions that we've undertaken that now has over a dozen sites across the U.S. participating is a study that is specifically focused on older adults with breast cancer who are getting chemotherapy. And trying to, it's asking the question of, it says, so this is the question the patients have asked me. They say, doctor, personalize the therapy for me. Don't look at my age, but look at who I am. And with that, help to make the right treatment decision for me. So that was the broad ask from patients. And what we're doing is, so this one has 700 people across the U.S. participating, where we are getting to know the patient before they start chemotherapy. And we're looking at what's their function, what's their memory, what's their social support, what's their nutritional status, what's their emotional state. And then we're also collecting a bunch of blood biomarkers as well. And the idea is we're trying to come up with a functional age rather than a passport or a chronological age. And utilizing that along with the, you know, patient's, what the patient really wants, their values, their preferences, and understanding how, you know, how they will tolerate chemotherapy based upon their functional age. With the idea being then that a doctor and a patient could sit in a room and the doctor could say, here's the benefits of therapy based upon who you are, and here are the potential risks that you might undergo. And hence, kind of way, you know, where are they on that spectrum of what they're willing, what risks are they willing to take? And the goal being that we pick the right therapy for the right person. So that's another study that is underway, actually very close to completion. I think we are in the last 75 patients joining that study. So that's very exciting. And BCRF supported that work. And then lastly is the idea of, you know, most of our cancer therapies have been studied in younger adults. And there's a real need to study these therapies, how well they're tolerated, what's the right dosing, and the patients who are going to get the drug. So we have several studies that we either have ongoing or launching that are really looking at, you know, the newest treatments that are FDA approved, and then specifically evaluating them in older adults so that we can provide both doctors and patients with guidance on how to dose the drugs, what are the side effects to expect, and how can we best deliver those treatments to an aging population.
Well, it's a fascinating set of questions and important series of research efforts. And, you know, I guess you've left me plenty to ask you about for the next time. So I would look forward to that as well. Dr. Arti Hurria is director of the Cancer and Aging Research Program at City of Hope. She is also co-leader of their Cancer Control and Population Sciences Program. She recently joined the board of directors for the American Society of Clinical Oncology and has been a BCRF grantee since 2012. Dr. Hurria, thank you so much for your time. I'm Chris Reback. This is BCRF Conversations. To learn more about breast cancer research or to subscribe to our podcast, go to bcrfcure.org/podcast.